I'm calling to order the Matsu Borough School District School Board meeting. Do we have a quorum, Member Walton?
We have a quorum with all board members present.
All right, Mr. Eric Cordero will give our board goals.
Thank you, Madam President. Vision: Matsu Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Mission: Matsu Borough School District prepares students for success. Beliefs: we believe that all students can and want to learn. Success breeds success. The needs and best interests of students drive all decisions. Stakeholders' participation is crucial to student success. Our core values are stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, efficiency, respect, collaboration, and commitment. We will improve student success, achievement, and performance by focusing on their career and college readiness. We will increase the graduation rate. Our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth. We will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for our students and staff. And we will our annual objectives and accountability will be assessed by quarterly metrics and timeliness.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Mrs. Tiny DePriest to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. All right, we need to move on to approve the agenda.
I move to approve the agenda.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection to going forward with the agenda as written? Seeing no objection, we'll move right on to persons to be heard on non-agenda items. Member Welton, will you read the rules?
Under persons to be heard, the following guidelines apply. The speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comment should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take this issue under advisement. It's a maximum of 1 hour per meeting, and this is the first half hour. And Larry Dearman, please come forward. State your name.
Oh, okay. Board member, superintendent. I want to preface what I have to say with just a little quick knowledge. I'm 71, and I'm a high school dropout. The last month, I've had the privilege of visiting with my wife 42 of your schools. If I had one-tenth of the opportunities that you provide to students, I would be a high school graduate. All of you have done a wonderful, wonderful job. Dr. Bramo, I've heard principal after principal after principal praise you and this board. Not one negative word. I owned a large company with employees, and I know if the people that are under you have the things to say they are about you guys, it's going somewhere. Thank you very much for your time.
There's no one else. There's no one else on the list, Madam President.
Anyone in the audience would like to come and speak before the board, now is your chance. We'll have another chance later in the meeting if you don't feel comfortable coming now. So not seeing anyone coming up, we will move on to administrative reports. Dr. Paramo.
Thank you, Madam President. At this time, I would request that Luke Fulp and Justin Micho come to the front. And we do have a special award this evening where folks traveled far to get here up to our school district to provide us, and these especially Justin Micho and our IT department, an exemplary school district award. And so I'm going to have Luke just explain that a little bit and then invite our guests forward. Thank you.
And thank you, Dr. Paramo. And at this point, I'm just going to have Justin describe his what we have in place and what led to the award and introduce the Interisys folks, if he could. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Justin Micho, the Chief Information Officer, and I'll just keep it brief. But over the past few years, we've been working hard to improve the technology throughout the district to focus on the students and improve the learning opportunities. One of the things we had to focus on was the infrastructure in place. You know, we focused on replacing computers, but, you know, that's what you see. We had to also focus on the things you don't see, behind the walls, the switches, those closets that people can't have access to. But they're in there. One of the things we did in doing that, we had to standardize our equipment. And what we did, we standardized with the Interisys networks. And over time, we've been working to, we've refreshed everything. We've added wireless, which you see in the room here tonight. And we've got the guest access network. So, you know, we're improving everything as a whole. And Interisys has noticed that, and they've got some criteria, but I'll introduce Jonathan Kidwell, the North American Director for K-12 with Interisys, and he can tell a little more about that.
So, first of all, thank you so much for allowing us to come. My name is Jonathan Kidwell. I do oversee the K-12 for North America for Interisys School Districts. And really, if you look at classrooms just in the not-too-distant past, the technology was sporadic at best in a lot of classrooms. And, you know, now in today's globally connected economy, really providing the right technology in every classroom becomes a priority for all students, faculty, staff. And so, fortunately, Justin Matsu Schools realized that, and over the last couple of years have done a lot of things in the back end to help allow the students to become more engaged in the classroom, become more connected in the classroom, and not just from being connected to wireless, but actually using the tools to improve the educational experience. And so every quarter we recognize school districts across the United States for what they're doing and enhancing the educational environment for the students. And so after reviewing all the nominees, it was an easy decision for us based on what Justin, his IT staff, and everyone around here has done in Matsu Schools. And so that being said, you know, my honor and privilege to present the Interisys Exemplary School Award to Matsu Schools. So, thanks, sir.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, gentlemen, for providing that award. Justin is an incredible worker and a very serious man, and a lot of principals give him a lot of trouble, but they just love him to death because he always comes through for them and providing what he can for their schools. So thank you, Justin. And the next administrative report is in regard to the Alaska Middle College School. It was a request by a board member to just provide some more mind's eye picture about the middle college. It is the second year of operation, and to be more specific, I'm going to turn it over to Gene Stone for a few words, and then we'll have a presentation and can answer your questions.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Parmo and school board. I'm going to have Kathy Moffitt come up, program administrator for the Alaska Middle College School. Anyway, she has a few slides that she would like to share with everybody, and it's a program that's doubled in size, and we expect to see it continue to grow.
Hi. I'm Kathy Moffitt, Program Administrator for Alaska Middle College School, and I'd like to just give you some brief update with the school, our newest school in the Matsu Borough School District. The application to Alaska Middle College School is online, and students fill it out and fill out an essay, after which they are scheduled for an ACCUPLACER. The ACCUPLACER will help determine the college readiness of the student. It's open to all juniors and seniors across the district, and it's our goal that we would mirror the demographics of the district as a whole. So we encourage all students to, if it's their choice, to apply and try. The staffing, last year we had two high school teachers. This year we have the same two high school teachers and a counselor slash teacher. So we have three people on there at all times. The college courses are, we hold 15 seats in each of the college courses, and then the rest of the seats are filled with community members. So our students are going to school as if, you know, it is a college, and the college classes are just what you would expect at any college. They are not geared to high school students. They're geared to the college students. We have, through it, what we do with the students is they know that one semester of a college course is equal to a full year of a corresponding course at the high school level. So if they test into the class, it then benefits them at the high school as well. This slide shows a little bit of the numbers from last year to this year. Last year we had in the fall 42 students. This year we have 84. And you can kind of see some of the differences between the cohort A of last year and cohort B of this year. The differences between the seniors and juniors. You can see that last year 66% of the students tested into what the college would consider college readiness, English class, English 111. This year, 75%. They consider math 107, college level readiness. Last year, 28%. This year, 11%. Of the 11%, we also noted that 33 students tested into what would be considered college level math 105. So we're looking at how do we bridge that gap, and we're offering what we call pre-calc. To try to ensure that these students in December, when they take the ACCUPLACER again, that more of them will be ready for Math 107. This year, as we began the school, our students, it's a larger student body, and they had their first government meeting. And they have brought to us several issues that they want us to work on. One of the issues is a lot of the seniors want their own graduation, so we're looking at that. Last year it was a real small group. This year they even have a petition, and so we're looking at that. Some of them have said that they want to be, you know, a part of their site school, their home school. They want to be involved in activities, and it's kind of cumbersome for them because riding the bus, they get there, and it's about 3 o'clock, and they have to get a pass from the school. So we're looking at possibly getting school stickers that we would put on their Wolf card to help facilitate their ability to participate in activities. They also ask about being connected with the yearbook. So we're looking into that. So we're working on some of their questions that they have for this year. This year offered some improvements. Last year they said, we would like a place to just, you know, be able to hang together, to have lunch. So this is an example of what we call the student union. And it has furniture somewhat like our cyber centers in that they have plugins available to them. It's also connected to a full kitchen. So this is it was afforded through legislative appropriated money, and it's something that just came online a few weeks ago when the furniture arrived. Through the Honors College at UAA, it had afforded an incredible opportunity for our students to have a Nobel laureate, Dr. Brian Schmidt, share. We had 80-some, we had our Alaska Middle College students there, 80-some of them. And the next session, he did a second session for more of our students, and we had 50-plus students bused in from area high schools that attended his presentation. During this presentation, UAA leadership, they were there, as well as Matsu Borough School District. After it, they asked for a meeting. During this meeting, Dr. Pat Campbell, he spoke really highly of Matsu Borough School District and the opportunity to partner with us, and he appreciated the board's support. He appreciated the support of the leadership, and he said he was impressed because we were a district that not only talked the talk but walked the walk, and we would get the job done. And he liked the support both work-wise as well as financial. The lion's share of the financial support comes through the grants, but he spoke very, very highly, and it's because of that that this opportunity kind of fell in our laps and maybe not others. All in all, I just want to close and say that Alaska Middle College School is a one-of-a-kind opportunity. It's the first in the state, and it affords another choice in Matsu Borough School District. Thank you.
Do any board members have questions? Mr. Larson.
How much time do I have? Would you explain, I had it somewhat explained to me, how the Alaska Middle College is paid for and how the credits are paid for?
Sure. Through the president, and I'll ask Gene Stone as well. Kathy Moffitt runs the instructional side of the house, and Gene Stone and Luke Volpe run the other side. And just like any other school, and that's why it's not called just Alaska Middle College, we had to add the title school on there so that it would be a separate funding site, and it was approved by the commissioner. So that's when it became our 45th school. And it can generate its own enrollment. And so partly, of course, like any of our schools, the enrollment generates funds to the district. The second part, and probably a large part of it, is actually our support from the Alaska Legislature through our delegation. They have provided $1.25 million thus far in 2 years to build the capacity, and basically the college can only take so many students at a time. We can't roll 150 students into the college all in 1 year. They needed to take those small incremental steps, and so about 50 a year can be added on because we can handle some in our side of the house, and then we roll them over to the college, and then as they finish those lower level courses, they roll over to the higher level. And so it will take about 4 to 5 years for this to build to capacity to be self-sustaining without those legislative grants. But the college credit, so we pay for the high school teachers who are with the Accuplacer building the capacity in kids. And remember, when you say 11% of the kids passed into Math 107, those kids are juniors. I mean, most kids, mm-hmm. they're not even graduated high school yet, and they're, we're getting kids into college courses. So as they roll in, our teachers, we pay for the credit on the high school side, if you will, with our teachers, and then the university side is paid through the grants.
One follow-up question on that. So if a kid goes through and completes his or her 2 years, they can get a AA degree and a high school diploma and not have to pay for the AA degree? It's virtually paid because of the money coming in from state and borough. Is that correct?
Through the president, yes. So like we said, the high school side is our borough's responsibility in EEDs, and the other side is funded through the partnership. And they can. There are 15 students, I believe, that are eligible and on track for the associate's degree. But, again, it's about passing those courses, getting those credits. But they will graduate high school either way, of course. But it works economically. It is not something for everyone. A lot of the activities, the activities such as dances and things like that, we want to try to facilitate, but kids have to make choices. We did start out with over 100 kids, but some schools just couldn't make it work with their practice times for sports, and if they wanted to be in sports, they had to make that decision. And so we're really focused that this program it can't do everything for every kid, but if there's pretty motivated kids out there, they can do it. But that is a possibility. We have kids on track to get the AA degree. One thing that this did open up was the Nobel laureate was brought up by the Honors College, and the gentleman saw the questions were such high caliber of the kids in the middle college that just basically they opened up a seat on the Honors College board for a Mat-Su School District representative. And so we are infiltrating the college, and like I said, most of this is for us to just be a scout and a spy out there. It is for those 80-some-odd kids in the program, but more so it's about learning about what colleges are looking for, college readiness, so we trickle that down to every kid in Mat-Su, all 5,000 high school students.
Member Cheesham.
Thank you, and to the chair. This is one of the most inspiring stories that we tell. It's a great opportunity, but I'm not sure I had a picture of it. What are they? Are they going in and everyone taking the same classes? There were three instructors, or do they have the lay of the land? Can they take any class that the college offers?
Through Dina or Dr. Paramo and the board president. The AccuPlacer is a standard test that the college uses, and it determines where students place at the college level. For example, we had a couple students that placed all the way to English 200. So they bypassed 111 and they went on up to 200. So it takes where you place into and builds from there. There are, to get an associate's is 60 credits. So some of the students, in their own planning, would forego the associates to apply the credits towards a degree that they're looking for, a bachelor's degree. On the high school side, we're keeping aware of what they need for high school graduation. So if they don't have a college class that will meet the high school graduation requirement, then our high school teachers will provide that class, covering the basic classes that they need, that they would require.
Thank you, and through the chair. So they're not taking philosophy or art appreciation unless there is a comparable high school course that helps them get both birds with one stone.
They would take part of the associate's degree would be electives, and those are part of the electives. So yes, they would take them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, and yeah, just thanks.
Member Welton?
Just to clarify, my understanding is that our teachers who are placed there are highly qualified in particular areas so that our students receive the appropriate high school credits.
That is correct.
Okay.
And on a side note, if a high school student needs a highly qualified course for high school for which those two cannot deliver, we use Apex Learning to get the teacher from our district to be the highly qualified teacher. So it's really, it is a menu of options for kids to make it work for them.
Mm-hmm. Member Larson.
Excuse me. I know in the high schools, this has drawn a lot of the kids out of their school that would score high. Is it encouraged by our high school counselors? Do they... How do you get sophomores and freshmen, say, on the track to do this? I mean, is it encouraged in the high school, or is the high school a little apprehensive right now about this program?
I'll go ahead and answer that because it's really a political issue. It is. Any kind of change is difficult for some, but we try to say that the only constant we can count on is that things will change. The idea about the testing is kind of a farce because the way that your testing goes up isn't for kids who already passed, who are juniors and seniors. The previous AYP testing was only to 10th grade anyway, so that really didn't matter. And so that idea isn't. But that they're... top kids are leaving. You know what? We come to the table saying that Mat-Su School District will have opportunities for kids and find the path that works for them. And we take care of all of our schools for staffing where they need it. They don't have to not offer a child something because it's, you know, it's not what we do. We really try to open the doors. And, you know, you have... kids from Colony going over to Wasilla to take a course, and kids from Wasilla going to Mat-Su Central School, and Mat-Su Central School kids going to Palmer. It is really becoming flat for these kids, and they do identify with one school, but they know that they can fly in and out of programs to meet their needs. And so it is a problem, but I think it's probably more of an adult issue about these are our kids and this is how we do things, because kids don't do things that way. A lot of the football teams are made up of kids who come from different schools, who come from different programs. Volleyball teams the same way. And it's funny, the kids see it, they just see the world flatter than we do. We see that we did it the way we used to do it, and that's the way it should be. But we're getting better at it. But the idea about the testing, that your AYP isn't going to change because those kids don't even take the test.
Member Welton.
Another point that was made is that we're trying to get the demographics to be the demographics of the district. In what ways are we doing that?
We're doing it in a couple of ways. Number one, it's open to all students. And if you were to come and visit, you would see a large amount of diversity with the group. The other thing that we're working on as ANCEPT is becoming more prevalent, and we're encouraging that. We hope to see that ANCEPT students will also, if that's their choice, would filter into that school as well.
Are there any other questions from the board? All right. Thank you, Ms. Moffitt.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Dr. Perlman.
Thank you once again. There is a load of administrative reports, but which we do every year, is the Mat-Su Borough School District assessment report. And it was timely. There was a board member that had additional questions in regard to lower socioeconomic status students, what kinds of testing, what the costs are. And so I have requested Mr. Stone and his department on the instruction side to also prepare an assessment report. And those folks will be willing to answer any questions as well.
Thanks, Dr. Promo and the school board. Yeah, I'm going to have Monica Goyette and Mr. Sean Arnold come up and give a brief presentation for you. Thanks.
I do not. I apologize. Are they? Good evening. We are here this evening to really kind of address three questions that have come up through conversations with the board. The first question is, what are the Mat-Su Borough district-wide assessments? And what really is the district cost to supporting these assessments? What is the new state accountability system? And how is Mat-Su doing compared to the state? And you have an itemized sheet that Mr. Arnold prepared for you. It's an overview of the new accountability system, and then also allowing you to see how each individual school did. And then finally, what are we doing for students in schools that have high levels of low socioeconomic status or meet the federal guidelines for poverty? So I am going to start with the first question. What are the Matsubara assessments? In terms of state and federal mandated assessments, we have the ACT Work Keys, which is the new assessment. 11th graders take it, and it is now part of the state accountability system. We have the high school graduate qualifying exam. In the spring of the 10th grade year, students are allowed to take this. They're assessed in reading, writing, and math. The ACT Work Keys, they are assessed in applied mathematics, learning for information, learning how to find information, and reading to find information. The standards-based assessment is given in grades 3 through 10 in reading, writing, and math, and 4th grade, 8th grade, and 10th grade also takes the science. The Alaska Developmental Profile is for our kindergarten students, and that is in November, December. And then finally, the National Assessment of Educational Progress is a biannual assessment that assesses a wide variety of academic content areas, and it is in 4th and 8th grade. And then the district mandated assessments include AIMS-Web, which is our Universal Screener and Progress Monitoring Assessment. And with that is in K-5. Just this year, the state required that in K-2 that we do a form of progress monitoring all of our students in early literacy. We were already doing this, so we were able to just have AIMS-Web is met the criteria for one of those assessments. We do measures of academic progress, MAP testing. We're doing it right now. And this is mandatory for all students in 2nd through 8th grade in reading, language usage, and mathematics. And then this September, with the great guidance of Mr. Arnold, we are implementing the Children's Progress of Academic Achievement. MAP did have a primary grade assessment, but this is by the same company, Northwest Regional Association, and we feel it's just more developmentally appropriate. We can take it up to 9 times a year. And I have an error there in my screen. I apologize. It's mandatory for preschool. This was a preschool assessment as well. So 4th grade, preschool, 4-year-old preschoolers, and then kindergarten and 1st grade will be taking it. So in terms of assessment costs, if it is a state mandated or federal mandated, then it is funded. However, there are some costs to the school district. We do have 2 full-time employees. One is required by the state, the district assessment coordinator, that is funded out of operational funds. And then our data analyst, Mr. Arnold here, is grant-funded. There are costs for administering it at the site, specifically proctoring, small group accommodations for students with IEPs, or with 504 plans. And that is about $20,000 per year. Luke would not put a stamp of approval on my accounting here. This is approximate. My husband calls it Monica math. So. And then in terms of the district mandated assessment, AIMS-Web, just the cost of purchasing that, the software program, is $50,000. But because it is now K-2 mandated by the state, we will be receiving a portion of that reimbursed. Our MAP, our Measures of Adequate Progress, that's 2nd through 8th, is $130,000. And the Children's Progress of Academic Achievement is $38,000. And you might look at those numbers and think that they're significantly large, and it is a lot of money. In terms of individual students, though, it's about $10 to $12 per student. And we have such academic efficiency with being able, these assessments are done within 2 weeks of the school year. We start assessing and get them all done within 6 to 8 weeks of the school year. And it is our universal screener. It's our way of identifying right away who our struggling kids are and who we need to make sure that we're providing additional opportunities for. And in a district like ours, where it's a transient population, both within our district and kids moving in and out. We are not having to spend time with individual teachers, spending time getting to know them individually, working with them on individual content areas. We can right away identify if there's a need. So we believe wholeheartedly that that's money well spent. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Arnold for question two.
Hi. So talking about the accountability system, we made some changes there at the state level for the NCLB waiver earlier this summer. We had to have two accountability systems there that we changed. The new accountability system replaces AYP. That was the requirement there under NCLB there, part of ESEA, the Educational Secondary Education Act. And these changes, it's a new way of looking at our schools. It's a new way of accountability and measuring our districts. I think it's a completely different way. I think it's a better way, in fact, of looking at our schools. Of course, with AYP, there was AMOs. There was a certain level that we had to meet. If we didn't meet those levels, there's consequences. AYP is no longer accountability. So there's two components there to the new state accountability. There's the teacher and principal accountability, and then there's the school and the district accountability components. These two parts, school accountability, so we have the ASPI, the Alaska School Performance Index, and then AMOs, the Annual Measurable Objectives. The way it looks, each school has a rating, and it's based on indicators that are weighted different in different areas. So, for example, the chart you see up here right now, it's three areas. This is for K-8 schools. So it's much more effective, academic achievement, attendance rate, school progress. So much different than we used to look at with AYP. For high school, it's much different. Factors that were never considered before, like college and career readiness, that's now added in. Participation rate there and attendance rate, those are all things that are now factored in. What it works out to be, based on those weights and the indicators, there's 100 points that each school is awarded in a rating, and those translate into stars. So 1 out of 5 stars. And that's what each school receives there at the final, and those just came in a couple of weeks ago, August 16th. The way it works out, how we're doing as a district, it's we're doing really well. As a district, for our stars, we have our percentage here, so 5 stars through the 1-star schools versus the rest of Alaska. 53%, over half of our schools, and then our 4 stars, so over 60% of our schools are greater than 4 stars, 4- and 5-star schools, so much higher than the rest of Alaska.
I'm just going to mention, you have your list, thank you, in regard to the schools. And if you notice on your list, 1- and 2-star schools in our district are schools that actually were designed to capture kids who were struggling in our schools. So we specifically created schools. If we were to disperse those students back into the larger attendance areas, it wouldn't look this way. But we believe, and we have as a district over time, to create programs for which students can be successful and they can come back to schools. So each one of our 1- and 2-star schools are non-traditional schools where we know students are sometimes choosing them to whom are at risk already. And so they're designed to pull them up from being at risk.
Member Larson.
I'm glad you brought that up because that was a major issue with AYP and punishing schools that were like Rochelle or Valley Pathways. My question is, why do we still have these specialized schools that capture kids why do we have them on this chart when everybody knows they're not going to be but at the bottom? AYP was the same way, only AYP punished them and would force principals out or everything else. But my question is, how come we don't put them in a separate category on their own? Because they'll never get up there, and that's not the purpose of that school.
I think there is a potential for those schools to get up there, actually, especially with the new indicators of work readiness and things. So as we focus on those items, they'll have a chance to grow. The one that I do agree with you on is Mat-Su Secondary School. And we don't really have control over the students who attend that school. That's the school associated with the juvenile justice system. And so we have 15 beds in our district for kids who are waiting to be adjudicated, and they come and go in 6 to 8 week sessions, so we don't hold them ever the whole year. And so I absolutely wholeheartedly agree that's going to be very difficult because we don't really work with these kids very much, but they're in our district. But the others, I think with the newer indicators, Mr. Larson, I hope to come back to you next year and say, we've raised them up. We'll see.
I will write that down.
Member Cordero.
Thank you, Madam President. Through the chair, Mr. Arnold, you mentioned that AYP and schools that were not meeting AYP, there were consequences. Mm-hmm. What are the consequences for school that remain in 1 and 2 stars, either with the state or a district?
That's a great question there, Vice President Cordero, through the chair. What it is the state's designated 1 and 2 star schools as priority schools. So additional kind of school improvement type resources and stuff will be provided by the state. 3-star schools are kind of watch schools, just kind of keeping an eye on. There is some steps that we have to take to kind of help them along. And then reward star schools there, 5-star schools, reward schools. And the state hasn't provided any further guidance. That's coming down here shortly about how we're going to, you know, help with those schools. So,
yeah. Member Rutherford.
Yes, I have two questions. One involves MAP testing. It said grades 2 through 8, but I've seen that kindergartners start taking MAP testing in the spring. Is that just their teacher's choice?
No, that's an excellent question through the chair. This year we are starting with the children's progress of academic achievement. It's an assessment by the same vendor, but we believe more developmentally appropriate. They were last year. Most schools were starting in the winter or spring in kindergarten, and the majority of first grade was using MAP. But we are moving to the CPAA. And one of the benefits of that, as we've been expanding our preschool opportunities, is that the CPAA, you can start in preschool, and MAP does not go down into preschool.
Part of the... If you go down to accountability that's purest sense, that's why we start the SBAs at grade level 3, mm-hmm. because the others are not necessarily have the reliability that we want. But they give you, it helps the kids to see something before we actually look at it to see, is it a matter of their ability to move a cursor or a mouse, yeah, or are they right. understanding an assessment? And so we can look at these kids, and interestingly enough, it's more of a matter of mouse clipping, because these kids do screen touches, you know. So we it's a way to assess and get them practice in something that later on we're actually going to use to provide detailed information on their learning. And but in true sense, and that's why NAEP doesn't go earlier. That's why SBAs are at that level, because it really is, you know, a child could be precocious, a child could just be shy. I mean, there really mm-hmm. are differences. Yeah. But we know that something that we practice and want students to move forward, whether it's saying your ABCs to a song or something, that repetition will aid in later success.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Then the school progress portion of the assessment, will it no longer be the case if a school has a subgroup that only has, say, 6 students and 3 of them don't do well at all, will it still have the same effect? In AYP, it kind of tanked the whole school. A couple of kids not making in a subgroup.
I'll give you the layman's version. Sean is way more detailed. There are subgroups. They are weighted. There is achievement as a whole. There are not as many subgroups. For example, we used to delineate ethnic groups, and we had multiple ethnic groups. Now we are specifically targeting Native Alaskans. But there is low socioeconomic status as a group, English language limited learners, and then students with disabilities. And so those 5 make up student progress. One thing that I think is important to note in with the ASPE score is they do err on the side of the kids. If a student is taking the ACT and the SAT and the work keys, they take the highest score in terms of progress or achievement on the high school college and career readiness. If in the graduation rate, they look at both the 4-year mm-hmm. cohort and the 5-year, and whichever one is higher for the school, they count that one. And so they have built in measures that I think more accurately and more fairly reflect how individual students in schools are doing.
Member Lacey.
Yes, through the chair, exactly what are we going to do for our Alaska Native students? I'm a parent of an Alaska Native student, and I'd like to know exactly what we're going to do for this.
Currently, we do have grants in our larger schools with American Indian Alaska Native students. We provide additional teachers to those schools through grants and through really our operational funds to provide smaller class sizes, because the information we receive back from students, especially at the high school level, is that class size is important. A lot of our Alaska Native students move in here at middle school or higher, and so they need that assistance. Our Alaska Native students in elementary perform as any other student. And so we really start to focus our efforts on the middle and high school when it becomes difficult for our students. We went to the legislature last year, and they provided this cooperative group for the NSEP. It's specifically designed to keep Alaska Native students motivated and progressing along the same paths. One of the things that we did for the career tech, we noticed that Alaska Native students were not being represented at the career and technical high school as they were other high schools, and so as they were district-wide, rather. So if we have 17% Alaska Native students district-wide, we would expect that a specialized school like, say, the middle college or career tech would also have that same percentage. We found that one year it only had 4%, and so we went back, and the Alaska Native students, we went and said, what's happening that Alaska Native students are not choosing career technical high school? And these were students that did choose career technical high school who were Alaska Native, and they said, well, you're asking us wrong. And we said, well, what do you mean by that? And they said, well, the way we find out about these programs is counselors come and talk to a big group of kids in a gym. And I just don't find out information like that. I want to talk to somebody. And so what we did the year before last under Mr. Okeson's direction is we asked the parents of the Alaska Native students at Career Tech if they could help us recruit. We brought those students to our middle schools and talked to Alaska Native students in small groups in eighth grade to learn about the program word for word and just in an informal environment. We now have a higher percent of Alaska Native students at Career Tech than the district as a whole. And so when we identify a situation, we try to target it. Our elementary school, we weren't falling behind, but in middle and high, we started NSEP. We figured out the Career Technical High School. So we really look at data to drive why isn't the data matching our demographics district-wide, and we try to go find out. And so those are just off the top of my head some of the things that we do. Of course, there is a whole grant through the federal government called Indian Education, which provides the extra funds. I believe Wasilla High has 2 or 3 additional teachers to bring the class sizes down. But that's a federal. But locally, it's really we listen to the students tell us, this is what you need to do to attract other kids and it worked there, and we just worked to continue. And really, I think our diversity days, our cultural celebrations, they're really all part of that. We need to honor cultures, whether they be Alaska Native or others, to really be a district that believes in all kids.
Member Rutherford.
Just to clarify, since I am kind of a numbers geek, the subgroups aren't—they're not weighted or anything. They're just an also, and also FYI. When we're looking at the data, that 40% school progress part of the pie is still all the students, and the subgroups are just sort of another piece of data, or do they affect the stars?
Yeah, Member Rutherford, through the chair. I'm also a numbers geek, very proud of it. The school progress there, it's really a cool kind of way of looking at it. It's looking at individual student scores full academic year, their valid test scores over a period of 2 years, and any growth that's being made. Previously under AYP and stuff with the SBAs, you had to get that 300 there on the 600 scale there, 300 to be proficient. Now we're not looking at if they're getting 300 and then we're going to write them off. It's going from 250 to 260, from 300 to 350. It's making progress, and it's kind of measuring that progress. There's a lot of tables and stuff that the state looks at to kind of figure out the progress scores. And for those four subgroups, including the fifth group there, the school as a whole, but they're measuring the progress that those individual students make at the school over a period of 2 years. So, is that? Yeah.
Talk about that. I guess the one of the most difficult things the schools had in the past was the students with disabilities. One of their it heavily affect just a couple of students. It could be two students heavily affect. It seemed kind of an imbalance in the weighting, but this way, because it just has to do with progress. It doesn't really matter where a kid is starting. If they've made progress, it's going to be a positive thing for the school. Right?
They still are. If you think of the school progress on a scale of like 1 to 100, and there's five groups. School as a whole is one of those. So if a school had all of them, school as a whole counts as 60% of that, and then the individual subgroups would count as 10%. So, for example, if students with disabilities did not make the growth, that would have a 10% impact on that school progress. So it is reflected in it, but it's not an all or nothing, as what you're referencing.
Okay.
Alrighty, and our last question. So what systems of support do we have for schools with a low socioeconomic status? And it's called Title I funding. And Title I was established in the Elementary and Secondary Education Act by Johnson, part of the War on Poverty. And this year our criteria is 40% of students must be eligible for free and reduced lunch. And there's four target areas that you can spend your money on. A school is allocated a specific amount of money based on the number of students that they have that qualify for free or reduced lunch. Instruction, professional development, family involvement activities, and extended time. And we have really, our federal programs department under Loreen Domke has done an amazing job of really building capacity in parent involvement. We've offered flights on it and really sharing ideas about how we involve parents in the school. And we really believe that a parent is their child's first teacher, and partnering with them is critical. Especially when if they are a family living in poverty, maybe school was not a great place for them, and maybe they didn't have great memories of school. And so we really want them to feel welcome, and that we value their expertise on their child. So last year we had the threshold for qualifying for free for Title I at 45%. So we had 21 schools eligible out of the 44 last year. And you can see there was $2.5 million that was allocated to those schools, plus an additional approximately $40,000 for parent involvement. This year we lowered that threshold to include more schools to 40%. If you go below 40%, then it's not a site. For example, at Swanson, their Title I this year, and we're at 40%. So they can spend their money on any student that needs it. If you go below 40th percentile, you can only target students that meet the poverty threshold. So you might have a student that needs a reading intervention, but if you're below the 40th percentile and they don't meet the free and reduced lunch, then they cannot join that class. So we try to include the maximum amount of schools that we can, but not get into having to target that money. That would be very difficult for principals and teachers not to be able to offer services to all kids. So this year we have 25 schools, and over $3 million was allocated to the schools, plus an additional $40 million for parent involvement. And of those four schools that were one and two stars, the two alternative schools are Title I funded, so they do receive additional funding. Questions?
Okay, Member Cheesham.
Yes, thank you very much. This is really helpful. Although I have to tell you, on the different assessments, what was that movie with the robots in front of the TV saying "Feed me, feed me"? I would take an hour on each assessment just to understand better how the questions are developed and how we know that the questions are good and how they're helping and how they're used and all that. I'm just really overwhelming curiosity about all of that, and maybe someone would allow me to do that.
Do you have a question?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I promise. Before 9 o'clock, I'll get to my question. but the question is about the assessments, the ASPI. Do we, as you dig down, do you, and even with the four stars and figuring out why they're not five stars, are some of them attendance? You know, can you easily define where the issues are? That's my first question. Where the issues are, and you know, look at individual schools and say, well, okay, this is attendance, and then we can develop a strategy for dealing with attendance at this school, and over here it's more about progress and so forth.
One of the things, the SBA right now is the test that we have, and I think the biggest controversy in our state is the new assessment. But you notice that the HSGQE, it's actually embedded in the SBA in 10th grade. And so, interesting enough, just as a side note, you can pass the HSGQE and get below a 300 on the SBA. So it's kind of quirky that way. But by the time the assessments come back for the SBA, it's too late. You can't change it that school year because it's at the end of the school year. That is why we address and use the MAP assessment, which generally takes a student about 25 to 45 minutes, a half of a class session to just figure out where the weak spots are and the strengths, and we use it as a screener to then go back in and work with them individually closer to change that. Because if we only waited to the SBAs to target what kids would know and to really define it, it would really be too late, because the kid would be in the next school year with a new teacher, new curriculum, new everything. So we try to address it the year for which the child would take the assessments. And you know, there's lots of thoughts about assessments, lots of strong feelings. But until something is different in the law, it is the responsibility, I believe, of our school board to be sure that these kids get a high school diploma. And part of receiving a high school diploma in our state is passing the HSGQE. And so we are really stuck in between philosophical differences all across the board. But we can't wait till just the HSGQE, because it's too late, technically. So we use others to help us find those information out, like you're talking about.
Member Cheesham.
Thank you. So, for example, are there some schools that are four stars now that would be five star just because of attendance? And how do we figure that out?
My former school. It's a 4-star because of attendance. Yes. And one of the things that we're looking at is our attendance policies and making sure that we're in compliance with state law, but also allowing for maximum instructional credit time. I can tell you at my own school last year, we were too strict on counting when a student was half day absent, and I believe that negatively impacted it. And so I do think that there's some things that we can do to improve attendance quickly. But then after that, we need good attendance policies that really encourage kids to come, welcoming them at the door, no matter what time they come, and calling parents and asking what we can do if they need to get there. So there are strategies that we know that are effective in helping kids get to school.
Member Larson.
Thank you. My question was on attendance. It says here, attendance rate for a school. What's that mean?
It's the average daily attendance. So it is an average. There's a complicated metric. Do you want to tell? The number of students that you have and the number of days that they have to be in attendance in the school year, and they multiply those and how many days they were present. So it used to be in AYP that participation was when they took the test. That's what we looked at as attendance. Now it's are they coming throughout the school year every day.
Maybe you can put it on our Board Connect because you just lost me totally. I'm sorry. And can you explain to me what's the difference between attendance that is acceptable attendance versus not acceptable, or you know what I'm saying? I mean, say a kid goes on vacation, his parents pull him out for a week on vacation. Is that attendance that's held against, or
excused what versus on? Unexcused?
Yeah, excused versus unexcused.
You know, at some level, that's parent prerogative to excuse an absence. And if they want to take their child out, I mean, they have that right to do that if they want to go on a trip. It's considered an absent. It's counted against our absent in the ASPE score. I guess I'm not 100% on your question.
If a kid goes on a 5-day vacation, or if he gets pulled out because he's got to go to the doctor, and it's an excused absence, is that held against versus a kid that just doesn't show up?
Yes, they both do.
So if a kid has to go to a doctor, that's held against them, the school?
Yes, it is.
That's interesting. I don't mean to criticize or anything like that. It just kind of seems, I know it's very, very important for kids to come to school. I do know that, but when you're talking 25%, is held against elementary through, or what is that, K through 8, on attendance, with no real assistance in how to, say, bring that attendance down, besides, you know, like you're talking about welcoming them at the door, what do you foresee to bring that attendance? How do you reach out to a parent that is too lazy to get his kid to school?
I mean, there's not like a truancy officer in the MATSU Bureau. I mean, ultimately, those are the accountability measures that that you could go to. But there are positive strategies that we know that are research proven that can help us. Just simply calling as a principal, I would call families and ask, what can we do to help you? We've asked if we can move a bus stop because a mother might have had a young child and just, you know, when it was windy, didn't want to walk out to where that spot was and she couldn't see it in the dark. I mean, there are things that we can do one by one to help our kids. We've done incentives for students if they come certain days, you know, so many days in a row. You really can have a positive impact on it. I really genuinely believe that.
One last question, if I might. What about kids that that are fishing and that kind of, you know, that their family goes out? What there's a term for that, migrant type. Now, are those absences, again?
Those are absences. Over 10 days, if we have not heard from a student, or if they're going to go to a village maybe for 30 days fishing, then, and we're not going to provide education during that time, then there are times when we would unenroll a student, and when they come back, then they would re-enroll. And so during that time when they're gone, those absences would not count against them. And school-related absences do not, because they're not absences, they're participating even though they might not be in a class, but if they're on a field trip or an extracurricular activity, those do not count against us.
Member Williams?
Yes, I would also, you are talking about how we can improve attendance in schools. I know that in a lot of our high schools, our tardy policy is so strict that it actually has less consequences for a student to miss a class than to show up 5 to 10 minutes late. So if you want to improve attendance in high schools, maybe we should look at reviewing that policy.
Thank you, very good point. Member Rutherford.
I also want to make sure that we engage parents and educate parents in how they can make some decisions that will lessen the impact on the school. I know that lots of times a doctor's appointment could be accomplished by taking half a day off. Half a day is not the same as missing a whole day, I don't believe, in the statistics, as opposed to being gone the whole day. And right now I just know that a lot of parents will just skip the whole day because they have a appointment that would really only miss 2 hours.
All right, is there any more comments or questions from the board? Member Cheatham.
The state does the calculating of this, right? Did we check their math?
Yep, Member Cheesham through the board chair. The state Office of Assessments under Teaching and Instruction there, they do actually Eric Callum, or Caldwell. Sorry, he does all the calculations there. He's the analyst there for the state, so he does all the number crunching there.
And just in addition, those numbers are sent to us, and we have 2 weeks to review them and challenge them. Mm-hmm. And that's why Sean is on staff. He is. Mm-hmm. That's what he does well. So, and we've won some challenges and different things.
All right. We will be moving on to borough and city reports. I see Mr. Griffin from Palmer.
Thank you, Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Paramo. Real quickly, my name is Doug Griffin, City Manager for the City of Palmer. We're fortunate enough over the last week or so to host some students from our sister city in Saroma, and I know they were in the schools. We had 5 students and 2 chaperones. We hosted them for breakfast at City Hall in Palmer on Monday morning, and there was a potluck last week for them. So that was very entertaining and shows the real strength of the Sister City program. At the Palmer Museum of History and Art, there is a display celebrating this long-standing Sister City relationship we've had with Saroma, some of the history about how the whole relationship got started through a ham operator who from Palmer area that got to know someone in Japan, and then it just took off from there with the support from the governing bodies, the city council here in Palmer and the equivalent over there. Just the only other thing is just that there are some construction projects. The most visible one right now is we're repairing South Valley Way right in front of the library, so there are some detours if you need to get. And depending on weather, mainly for paving, we hope to get that done in a couple of weeks. We can work in the rain, dig, and do that stuff, but the paving, we're going to need a little stretch of dry weather here before the snow flies. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't see City of Wasilla, so we will take a 10-minute break for the board. Thank you. Williams to do the Student Advisory Board update first.
So although SAB hasn't met since our last school board meeting, students are still busy around the district. Colony Wasilla had their homecomings last week, and Palmer is having theirs this weekend. Also, just a thing to look forward to in the future, on October 4th, we are having our, I think it's the 35th annual Potato Bowl between Palmer and Wasilla at Wasilla. And then on a side note, I would just like to mention that personally, I was invited to testify on behalf of MatSU students at a Senate Finance Educational Subcommittee meeting last week. And mostly I spoke about class sizes, early literacy programs, and increasing the communication between students and legislators. So hoping we'll, they had a lot of interest in talking to students about their ideas on education, so we're looking forward to having future meetings with them.
All right, Dr. Paramo.
Thank you, Madam President. And I just want to give absolute kudos to our student board representative. She was dynamite and wowed them. And I think one of the comments was, oh, you must have testified like this before. And she said, no, this is my first time. But she had every ear in the room was listening. She's quite poised and quite bright. So thank you. You did a fine job. I just have very brief announcements because administration has just provided a few reports. The enrollment update is quite healthy. And we'll do some additional information in the Board Connect to give you the exact numbers. But currently in SchoolMax, our enrollment, the number of kids that actually see us every day, are 17,722. Our FTE, which is the full-time equivalent for enrollment purposes, is 17,471. And the difference therein is the amount of preschool students for which we do not receive benefits but through legislative grants, as well as non-average daily membership or ADM students. But our school district's enrollment is 17,722, approximately 205 or a little over 200 more than was projected, and we projected 100 more. And so the MatSU is growing, and we are keeping on top of this. Of course, the beginning at the end of this month is the 20-day count, for which we will, that 20-day count is the metric that is used in calculating the school finances and the support of revenue to our district. And if it is, these year's numbers are anywhere near what's happened in the past, we're going to continue to grow through that period. And so we had mentioned previously 16 teachers were released to different schools to lower those class sizes where we needed them, as well as to add additional specialized staffing, whether it was special education or career technical. So, and the last thing is just on the bond update. We had a terrific bond update last week from the borough. So I just want to mention the invitation to the Houston High School's ribbon cutting. And I just wanted to mention that it did come very quickly. The October 4th date is quite the date in the district to get something done. And Wasilla, because it was the Potato Bowl, and last year's Potato Bowl was Palmer's ribbon cutting, that the ribbon cutting won out at Wasilla for the 4th, and Houston's second, they wanted the 4th because it was their homecoming, but their second choice was this Friday, and this Friday is the ribbon cutting, and we just invite everyone out there. Our president will be speaking. And so hope to see you there, and it's going to be quite exciting to add another field to our school district. Thank you.
All right, so that moves us to the consent agenda. Can I have someone move that, please?
I would like to move the consent agenda. The minutes from the September 4th meeting. B, 14-024, recommendation for certified new hires. C, 14-25, recommendation for rehire of retired teachers.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection from members of the board? Seeing no objection, that is moved, and we will go on to action items. Can I have someone bring forward the action item A?
I would like to move forward action item 14-023, AASB core resolutions.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. I wanted to give a few rules before we start on this core resolution. First thing I would like to do is, I know I'm just telling how we're gonna do it. So first thing I would like to do is to move the bulk of the resolutions that we have not pulled to discuss. Just do a quick vote on that. Then we will discuss each resolution as it comes forward. There'll be room for public testimony, also room for questions from staff if board members have questions. When you have a question, it needs to be a question, not philosophizing. We will have time later to speak. When it is during the discussion, you will have two bites at the apple. So make your comments succinct, and you get two chances. There will be no 5, 6, 7 times for you to speak. You'll have two times to speak on that. So with that, if someone can bring forward the core resolutions that we did not pull or the bulk of the core resolutions.
I would like to bring forward the core of the resolutions that we have not pulled for a vote.
Second.
Okay, so it's brought forward and seconded. These are the resolutions that we do not oppose moving forward as a full board. So is there public comment on this portion of the core resolutions? Does anybody have any questions on these core resolutions? Okay, so a yes vote on this would be that we agree with AASB's core resolutions as they stand. So, except for the resolutions that we have pulled, resolutions are 1.7, 1.9, 2.8, 2.14, 2.17, 2.29, 3.25, new resolution 4.14, 4.15, 5.2, 5.11, and 5.14. So, yes, why don't we ask Carly if how she votes before we go on with the board?
Yes.
Okay. So, Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Cheesham.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Cordero.
Abstain.
Member Rutherford.
Yes.
Member Lacey.
Yes.
Member Cordero, I don't know if you can abstain without a reason. Can you give us the reason for your abstention?
I was not part of the when you had your working time to talk about the resolutions, and I don't feel that my vote right now would be appropriate given that I don't have the same information that you do.
All right. Member Welton, is that an approved reason for an abstention, acting as our...
you have discretion. Generally, it has the abstention has to be more than just I don't have enough information.
And in that case, I changed my vote to no. Thank you.
All right. And my vote is yes, so those pass as we discussed. So the first item on the list is 1.7. It is NCLB ESEA that we have pulled forward. Do we need to bring these each forward and then vote? Okay, so can I have someone bring those forward?
I move 1.7, the NCLB ESEA resolution, 1.7.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any member of the public who would like to make comment on this? All right, we won't ask administration to make present on this unless someone has a specific question. So is there
a specific question from the board to administration on this. Member Cheatham.
Okay, I'm going to break the rule and just make a comment because I'm the one who asked to pull this, and I did that just to give me some more time, but I no longer have any objection to it, as it seems.
All right. Is there any other questions that a board member might have for administration? All right. So we're to comments on this. Is there any comment on this, or should we move right to voting? Okay, no comment from the board. So is there any... Oh, I'm sorry. Member Larson.
Just explain the vote when we... What yes means, what no means.
Yes means that we would forward this with AASB's, what AASB recommends, and 1.7 would be that it is not sunsetting, and AASB is going to amend the rationale like it is in front of us regarding the waiver. So this is just amending the rationale, and a yes vote would mean that we agree with AASB's amendment. So, Member Williams, do you have a comment on this one?
No, thank you.
All right. So, is there any objection to passing this forward with approval for the amendment? All right. Seeing none, we will just forward this as we agree with AASB's rewording on the rationale. 1.9, compulsory attendance age. This is one that we pulled just because AASB on our list did not have. They said it was it was not sunsetting. And I guess we pulled this because we wanted to discuss it. I'm sorry. Okay. So, Mr. Larson, you were the one who pulled this. Do you want to move this forward?
Yes. I move 1.9 compulsory attendance forward.
Second that.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Is there a member of public who wants to speak about compulsory attendance age at our schools? All right. Is there any question for administration on this? All right. Member Larson, this was one of your concerns. Do you want to start with a discussion?
Right now, the current law is from age of... says current law requires compulsory school attendance from age 7 to 16, and they want to change it from 6 to 18. I don't agree with the 16 through 18 area. I do agree that it should go down to 6, but there's no way to enforce a kid at 16 of age except on, I guess, on paper. There's no meat to it. There's no reason to do it. 16 through 18, 18-year-old can join the military, I believe. I'd like to... Well, that's my objection. I do agree going with a younger age, but I object to this because of the 16 through 18.
Member Welton?
I support this because I believe that we're at a time when we need to have a cultural change, and the idea is that children should finish school. If you're 16 and have your high school diploma, it's different than if you're 18 and have a high school diploma. I mean, you've gotten it early. You can get out. It's still hard to get a job. I think that there's life skills that are learned in school, and it's a cultural change. It's like the cultural change that's occurred over the years about smoking and things like this. There would be nothing said when I walked into a business and people were sitting around smoking, and it's a cultural change. We now need to have our kids get their high school diploma, and the idea that you can leave school early. We've got kids that disappear on us at 14. I would like to see that it becomes the cultural thing that just says that you have to be there. There's no teeth in it. We don't have truant officers. but I would like to see this so that it becomes more of a normal, natural thing that people just say, well, I can't leave school until I'm 18. We've got too many students that I know about that are on the, they're out there. Today I was at the gathering place that my house put together, and they talked about the 70, 80 kids that they've already seen since July 1st. And they're living on their own. They're out in camping out. Well, in a few more weeks, they're not going to be able to camp out. But they don't have any place to go. They've chosen to leave home. They've chosen to leave school. I'd like for them, for us to have a community that says we care. And I think that that's part of this cultural change that needs to occur, that we just say, you're in school until you're 18. Thank you.
Member Rutherford?
I, too, support this. A person is a minor until they're 18 years old. If they graduate early, then they've shown maturity and they can move on. It's mandatory until 18 or you graduate high school. I see no reason why we shouldn't have the expectation that students graduate high school until they become an adult. Then they can make decisions for themselves at 18. If they want to drop out then, haven't graduated, they can. But they're not allowed to make other legally binding decisions before 18, and yet we say it's okay for them to just drop out of school. I think it's, like Member Welton said, I think it's, even though we can't enforce it, doesn't mean we shouldn't say that this is what our expectations are.
Member Cheatham.
Yes, through the chair, I'd like to ask Member Larson if your objection to it would be any different if there was a sentence calling for funding for truant officers in inappropriate districts.
I see this just kind of a play on words. It doesn't mean anything. There is no truant officers. And it says that, if I read it right, it says, I don't really read in there that says if you graduate at 16 that you don't have to stay in school. It implies that, I assume. Well, yeah, doesn't really come out and say that. But I understand the whole motive behind it, but I don't believe by passing another rule and regulation that it's going to solve the social economic issues that are going on, why these kids are dropping out of school, why their parental guidance isn't there, and why are these all issues. It's just another rule or regulation to a kid that's already having troubles with rules and regulations, and there's no teeth behind it. You know, it makes no sense to me to pass a law to say, okay, you got to stay in school till you're 20. I mean, there's nothing there to support this. It's just a change in the regulations. It's a whim with no meat behind it. Now, if we changed it to say five-year-olds should go down to five and made preschool readily available and programs readily available for those kids, I would say yes, let's go with that. But it just doesn't make any sense. That's all. It's just if you had a truancy officer, good luck. That won't work either. That's never worked before. But I would agree with it. Thank you.
All right. Would anyone else like to speak on this? All right. So, Carly, how do you feel on this?
It brings up a lot of interesting situations. We do need to realize that the kids who drop out at 16 have their reasons. I agree with Welton. I was about to say Wilson. That it could start a social change in the way people think about how long you have to be in education, though I don't think that would be quite a quick transition. It could be years before students actually take you seriously. Though I don't know how students would take moving it to 18. I'm kind of on the fence about this one. it seems to be that, yes, it accounts for a high school graduation, but I've heard of a lot of students who have dropped out and come back in, and when they dropped out, that was what convinced them of coming back to school. So I'm not sure.
Okay. Any other comments from the board? All right. I would love to have students all go to school till they're 18 and to graduate, but I tend to agree with Member Larson. We don't have truancy officers. I think probably a better AASB would be to lobby for some truancy officers and put some teeth behind the law that we have. So yes vote would mean that we are agreeing with attendance age going to age 6 through 18. So, Member Lacey?
No.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
No.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Cheesham?
Yes.
Member Larson?
No.
And I vote no on this, so I'm sorry, I wasn't counting. What is the vote? 4-3, no. All right, so we're moving on to the CIP list. This was one of the ones that was pulled just because AASB didn't have anything behind it. I called AASB the CIP list on AASB. It is sunsetting, but AASB is continuing that with no changes. So is there any member of the board who would like to discuss the CIP list? Do any members of the public have a comment on the CIP list? Okay. I'm sorry. We're not even... I want to get through these so fast, I'm not even having it brought forward. Can I have someone bring 2.8 CIP list forward?
I move 2.8 CIP list.
I'll second it.
Okay. Like I said, this was AASB. It's sunsetting, but they're going to continue it as written. Is there any members of the public who would like to comment? Do board members have any questions? Member Welton.
I'm just looking at it. It doesn't affect us in the idea, because we do our maintenance and things like this, and we go out for bonding. It's my understanding that we don't ever get to be on the list. Is that correct?
The only time we were on the list was when Sioux Valley burned down, and then we bumped up to the top of the list at that point.
Okay. And so supporting this is supporting the districts that have the need and the priorities. It doesn't affect us directly, other than we needed it that one time. I just need that clarification. I see no reason to not support this.
All right, is there any discussion by the board? Ms. Williams, do you have an opinion on this one?
No, but I do agree with it.
All right. Okay, so yes vote would mean we are passing it on as AASB to continue. So, Member Cheesham?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
And Member Larson?
Yes.
So we agree with AASB keeping this on the on their list, and with 100% approval of this one. Next on our list is pupil transportation 2.14. Can I have someone bring that forward?
I move 2.14 pupil transportation.
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there a member of the public who would like to speak on this? Are there any questions from the board to administration on pupil transportation? All right, is there any board discussion? All right, it looks like the only thing that was changed on this is they added passage of SB 57 in 213 increases pupil transportation funding at the rate of the Anchorage Consumer Price Index through November 2015, at which time the automatic increase is repealed. So it looks like we will be talking about this again next year for pupil transportation. So a yes vote would mean that we want to keep 2.14 in with the deletions and the addition of the passage I just read. So, Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Cheesham?
Yes.
Member Larson?
Yes.
All right, so that one passes with, I vote yes also. That one passes with 100%. 2.17 insurance costs. Can I have someone bring that?
I would like to move forward 2.17 insurance costs.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Is there a member of the public who would like to speak on insurance costs? Or, I'm sorry, AASB's insurance costs. All right. Does anybody from the board have questions for 2.17? Member Welton.
I would like to have an understanding of what this would do for our budget and our employees.
Through the chair, our folks that work on insurance are our chief business officer, Mr. Luke Fulp, and through human resources, Ms. Catherine Gardner. So I will defer to that information to just maybe answer specific questions. In Glacier View, we actually had a very clearly spelled out prediction of whereby it demonstrated that the overall cost of an employee is 28% over the Anchorage CPI over the last 10 years or so, but the salaries going to teachers' pockets is below the Anchorage CPI, meaning that the lion's share of those costs are in benefits rather than salaries. And if Luke Fulp and Katie Gardner can add any specific other detail that may help in the decision making to make a more informed decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Promo, and I'll just defer to Katie Gardner, our Director of Human Resources. I believe she's prepared to give a report on this specific item.
Through the chair, Member Welton, I hope I can answer your question, but basically what I think the AASB resolution does is to support health insurance in two ways. One, either through increased funding from the legislature to assist us in trying to not necessarily effectively manage, but be able to pay for the increases that health insurance is we've been experienced with health insurance over the past and what we expect to continue at the same rate into the future. But what it also does is provide an option for school districts in the state of Alaska, potentially through the efforts of the state of Alaska, to pool together and come up with a pooled plan, the state is right now exploring and trying to study to make sure it would be possible is that with a larger group and a larger pool, you have increased buying power and you have increased ability to negotiate, because what's very clear is that what's driving healthcare costs up quite so much is the cost of care. That's what it's about. So if we can pool together and have a greater resource of individuals, you've got greater buying power and greater negotiating power to hopefully influence the market in a way that a school district as a single unit just can't even possibly expect to do, not with our size. So I believe that's what the pooling part of this is about.
Do we have any other member, Lacey?
How is this going to increase the health care coverage over what you have currently now? And I mean every employee in this place aside from the school board. How is this going to make it better?
Well, this resolution doesn't provide that level of detail. Ideally, if we're talking about the pooling option, because the increased funding option doesn't push any sort of change to health coverage for the school district. It's just additional finances, additional revenue from the state to help us afford it. So there's no change under that scenario, which is also part of this resolution as an option. If you're looking at the pooling option, I can't tell you that it absolutely will have an effect. The intent or the idea is that if we can affect health care costs in Alaska, we can bring the cost of health care down and thus the cost of health care insurance down. And under our current arrangement, with the negotiated agreements that exist with all of our bargaining units, we have a percentage share of that insurance cost. So if the cost of insurance goes down, the cost for the district goes down, and the cost for employees goes down an equal amount.
But you don't know if this is going to bring down our insurance rates. It's all up in the air until somebody comes up with some plans, some surveys or some research somewhere. Is that not correct?
I can't guarantee that pooling will reduce our costs. I can't really guarantee anything with health insurance, to be honest.
And this is AASB's, and they do have two different choices. So I don't know that our school district can answer those questions either. So, Member Larson.
To do nothing means that it's simply going to increase, according to Mr. Luke, forecast that it's just going to increase forever, and unless we do nothing, when we do nothing. And so virtually we're going to fall behind 1 or 2% every year and never, and virtually have to cut. Is that what I'm reading right now, if we do nothing at all?
The cost of health insurance is going to increase. All forecasts that are out there and available that we have looked at have health care insurance costs increasing at, I believe we used, Luke can correct me if I'm wrong, 8%. That's the best research that's available. The funding from the state is not increasing by 8%. So, yes, you're going to take a bigger portion of the resources that we have to health insurance because that is going to increase.
So that if we do nothing, it's just going to increase it like it has for the last 20 years. It's just going to increase with no foreseeable income coming in to offset that. So we're going to lose continuously, like we've talked about. Not only that, but commodities and everything else, and with no increases. But if we make a move and pool insurance, there is a good possibility. I would say the possibility, I'm no expert, would be that the bleeding would not be as bad. I don't think we're ever going to get to the point where we're going to go the opposite direction and actually save. I think what we're going to do is look at alternatives to bring that 8% down, maybe only to 4%.
Member Larson.
But okay, that's my point on this. That's, I would support this because we're going to try to do something about it. If we do nothing about it,
okay, I'm counting okay. This as your one bite from the apple
you can,
debate.
You can do it too.
So
if you
okay,
to.
So Luke, did you have a comment?
Yes, thank you, Madam President. To Member Larson's point that he was just making, we're not looking at reducing healthcare costs. We know that they are increasing. It's a national trend. It's a reality. What this resolution proposes is to either have the legislature increase funding for the healthcare costs that are tying up our budget in a very large way. It was represented as our most significant cost driver within our budget, or the creation of new insurance pooling arrangements to mitigate increases in insurance costs. So what this resolution proposes, as I read it, is to support that pooling if it mitigates. And currently, the legislature does have a study out there that's being conducted by the Hay Group. And if they find that the pooling would mitigate, I believe that would be favorable information brought back before the legislature. But that this resolution simply represents an affirmation towards increased funding, or if it's proven that this new pooling would mitigate costs for health insurance without reducing coverage whatsoever, that AASB would be in favor of that.
All right.
Member Cordero.
And he just touched on the issue I was going to mention, so I'm good.
Okay, Member Rutherford.
Same here. I just didn't want us to get into a debate about pooling, because that's not what this is about. Mitigate is the key word, only if it mitigates.
Okay. All right, Member Larson.
One quick thing. The pooling, is that with the state or with other insurance agency? Is the pooling just with one entity? It didn't really.
Member Larson, in the AASB, it doesn't get into that kind of detail at all. It's just asking us if we approve the and or creation of new insurance pooling arrangements to mitigate increases.
Well, the state's talking about pooling is what I'm getting at. Is it the state that's going to pool, or can other entities pool together?
I'm not sure if that's clear yet. It doesn't say that in our... All right. So any other comments or questions? Any more discussion from the board? Member Williams, do you have a comment? Oh, I'm sorry. I was kind of counting that as discussion because Member Larson had jumped ahead to discussion. Member Cheesham, would you like to speak on this?
No, I just wanted to speak. We're in the point where we're taking our bites out of the apple. The thing is, we really are, as it stands now, if we vote no, then the resolution stands that we ask for better funding. If this would say for more study or something, I feel like we're signing on to a blank check if we vote yes for this. Or another way to say it is we're buying a car sight unseen. I would really like to see what's out there, and I'd like to see the resolution happen after the study has been done and after the different programs are put out there, because if we lose our local control to negotiate, to create a good insurance policy for our workforce, and I'm just not ready to sign the blank check.
Member Welton.
Well, one of the things I would like for us to look at is that they've added the and or creation of new insurance pooling arrangements. So we could just say we don't want their amendment and just say AASB urges Alaska state legislatures to take action through increased funding to mitigate increases in insurance costs. And that is a possibility. Or we could make some other amendment if we don't like this the way it is. Or, as Mr. Cheesham said, we could just not vote for it.
All right. Do we have comments? Other comments from the board? Member Williams?
No comment.
All right. I did want to say a little bit about this. This is one of our biggest cost drivers in the school district. I think it went up 135% in 10 years. So it's a huge cost to us. I think that when we're looking at such a huge cost and such a financial burden on the school district, we need to look at all of our options. I personally am not willing to take this out. I like that they have it in here because it gives the legislature the option to look at a lot of different things, not just say give us more money so we can pay more money and continue the way we have been. Member Welton.
I'd like to propose an amendment, and I'm trying to get it in my head here. AASB urges the Alaska State Legislature to take action through increased funding and or creation of new insurance pooling arrangements. I think to study increased funding and or creation of new insurance pooling arrangements. And if somebody has some better language, a study needs to be done before would they do anything, I think. And if That's my proposal, is to say that it needs to take action to study whether increased funding and or creation of new insurance pooling arrangements would mitigate increases to insurance costs.
All right. Before we have a second on that, I wanted to point out that they have put aside $250,000, and they are studying that right now, the legislature. So,
okay.
If
then
do
I
you want to pull
I'll
that?
I'll withdraw.
Okay. All right. Are we ready for a vote?
I think I do have one more bite.
Member Cheesham.
That point is, I thank you for pointing that out. That's really important. So I was ready to move a little bit, but the fact is there's a study out there. Let's wait until the study is there, and then when the study comes out and we like the results, then put forward a resolution, you know, calling for the creation of new pooling arrangements. Let's know what we're voting for. We don't really know that it's going to be better. And we're kind of acting on faith that it will be, but I still think that we should leave it as is until we know what we're looking at.
All right. Anyone else? Okay. Member Rutherford.
But if we vote no, we're voting against the entire resolution, correct?
No, if we vote...
Or just their amendment to their resolution.
If we vote no, we are voting against their amendment that's in bold. Yes.
Will that be clear to them that we're not just tossing out that whole 1.7?
When we report to AASB, it will be... either a yes or no vote on their amended portion.
Okay.
So I'm hoping it would be clear to them.
We can still support the original language.
I believe so, yes.
Can we stipulate that that be clear in our communication to them?
Yes, we can. Okay. Member Williams.
I vote yes.
Member Lacey.
No.
Member Rutherford.
No.
Member Cordero.
Yes.
Member Welton.
No.
Member Cheesham.
No.
Member Larson.
Yes.
And I vote yes. The vote is 4-3 without the amendment. So we're voting against the amendment here and to pass it through as it was written originally. That makes sense? Okay. All right. So the next one we will move on to is 2.29 excess facility space. And will someone pull that for me?
I would like to move 2.29 excess facility space.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak on this? All right. This is one of the ones that we pulled just because AASB didn't have anything on it. We do not have excess facility space in our district. And when I contacted AASB, they said that it was going to be 2.29. Sorry, let me find it on my list. They are just, it's sunsetting, and they are just going to recommend that it be continued. So do any members of the board have questions of administration on this? Any questions on it? Is there any discussion on this? All right. Is there any objection to approving this as written to continue with AASB as a resolution? Seeing no objection, we will move that forward. 3.25, tobacco-free schools. Can I have someone?
I move item 3.25, tobacco-free schools.
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there a member of the public who would like to speak on this? Do we have any questions for administration on this topic? All right, Member Welton.
I'm passing out the amendment I would like to do and why I spoke to you earlier. I couldn't fit everything into the one sentence, so I added parts of a sentence to the resolution. AASB supports and advocates for comprehensive tobacco-free school policy in all districts around the state that promotes general health and welfare for all students and all individuals in the school environment. This includes, I'm starting a new sentence there, this includes all school properties and contractors in the schools, which protects the future generations from tobacco use and exposure and reinforces tobacco-free norms and attitudes.
All right, so this is an amendment you want to propose?
Yes, I propose this as an amendment to the what was there.
Do we have a second?
A second.
Okay, so this is the amendment before us. It's been seconded. Is there any discussion on this item? I have a comment. I think it's a great addition. Member Welton, I fully agree with this. Member Wilson. Williams, I'm sorry. Member Williams.
Could you reread the statement slower? I don't have a copy.
Oh, you didn't get a copy? I'm sorry.
You have the copy now.
Okay. Yes, I agree with that.
Okay. Dr. Paramal just told me this is currently how our board policy reads also.
That's why I wanted to bring it forward.
Okay. Is there any more discussion on the amended? All right, so we're voting on the amendment. Yes would mean we agree with the proposal. Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Cheesham?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
And I too vote yes. So we're back to the amended 3.25. Is there any comment on the amended 3.25? No discussion. So Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Cheesham?
Yes.
Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
And Member Williams, I'm sorry.
Yes.
All right, and I too vote yes. So this passes with the amendment with 100% of the vote. We are down to 4.1 for teacher tenure.
I would like to move 4.14 teacher tenure.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak on 4.14 AASB teacher tenure? All right, seeing no members of the public. Do we have any questions for administration? Sorry, Member Lacey.
Yes, I'd like somebody to explain to me why this is called tenure. Because high school teachers, public education teachers, tenure differs from college professors. Can we rename this the just cause provision?
Member Lacey, you're not in debate with administration. It's for questions, so you don't need to be in that mode. Please go ahead.
Through the chair, I don't know if you could rename it. I believe that this is directly related to a state statute that uses the term tenure, which does apply to teachers working in the K-12 environment. So I think you would want to use tenure.
Are there any other questions of administration? Okay, I don't see any other questions from the board. I do have a question. I know that when we spoke on teacher tenure before, the way AASB has their resolution written, it says that it is for giving school districts longer to take a look at teachers and see if they are appropriate. However, our school district did have a different reason for encouraging the increase in teacher tenure. Dr. Paramo touched on it. Can you go over that again for me, because I'm not quite sure if I got the whole gist of it, please.
When we provided when we provided testimony last year in support of the board adopted legislative agenda, one of the constraints that we as a school district experienced was an inability to effectuate a reduction in force for any tenured staff. And we had some special areas where we had too many staff members in a particular teaching area, and we were unable to reduce the workforce there because we only had tenured teachers. And there are two specific criteria that a district must meet in order to be able to lay off or do a RIF for tenured teachers, and it is a reduction in the basic need calculation, which we don't experience, and a reduction in enrollment, which, as you heard earlier tonight, we're not in that situation either. So part of our rationale in supporting the lengthening of tenure from 3 years to 5 years is you expand the pool of individuals who you can consider as part of a reduction in force, and we then have additional flexibility when we're in a situation where we don't have a balanced budget. Our expenditures exceed our revenue, and we're looking to have to balance that. And as Dr. Paramo said a number of times, we're a human resource business. 85%, somewhere in there, of our budget is staff, and that's usually the only place where we can make any sort of meaningful impact to really get to where we need to be.
Member Larson.
Sorry. So the only reason we're looking at increasing from 3 to 5 is because maybe there's going to be a reduction, or are we looking at increasing from 3 to 5 because maybe a teacher needs more assistance, or we can take a look at that before they go over into a...
I believe that the additional time provides us additional discretion, which is typically a good thing. But our primary reason for supporting this last year as part of the legislative agenda was to provide additional discretion to the school district in looking at a RIF. But I do think that the 5 years and having additional time to give teachers to improve or make a decision regarding their retention is an additional benefit that we may take advantage of, but really the RIF language was our primary testimony last year.
I might add through the president, that would be different, I believe, in speaking to superintendents from smaller school districts in Bush, Alaska. They felt the need to actually have the time because many staff members move and they just needed more time to work with individuals. And so the impetus for this really came from two different areas, I think, whether you're from a large school district or a small one.
Member Wilton.
Just kind of figuring it out. I managed to teach a lot of teachers in our district. They come out of Matsu College and UAA, and a lot of the teachers have been here just a very short period of time. There's a lot of fear and anxiety, and some are even thinking that, you know, okay, if they're extending that time, then I'll get a couple of years under my belt here and then I'll leave because there's no way I can go the whole 5 years. The tenure thing is just, it's too much. Are they changing the tenure outside? Do you know this?
I don't have any information about trends in tenure in the lower 48.
Okay.
But we could certainly try to get that information and provide it to the board.
Thank you.
Member Rutherford.
I have a hard time understanding. Now, I've never supervised more than 12 people, and I know that some of these high schools have 30 or 40 people, but I've never had more than 3 months of
when someone was on a probationary period, if I hadn't figured out that they needed to go in 3 months. And I realize it's a very different situation, but I guess I'm having a hard time. It says that they need more time to evaluate. I know we're changing the evaluations, but there's just part of me that thinks if a principal hasn't figured out in 3 years that a teacher is not good at their job or needs some support or needs to improve, then we have a management problem, not a teacher problem.
Well,
do you
I
have a question, member of
I can speak to that.
The resolution says that this is because we need more time.
Okay.
And I need someone to explain to me why we can't figure out in 3 years. Because you can always fire a teacher. And there's a misunderstanding that tenure means you can never get rid of someone. I mean, someone for cause can be gotten rid of. But so my understanding was always to see if in that three years, are they cut out for this job or not? You know, and why can't we get that done in 3 years?
Well, there's a couple of things that I would just want to remind the board is that these are resolutions that are proposed by AASB, which covers the entire state. So remember that you have some school districts where you've got a single individual who's covering the whole school, and that's one teacher that's there. They don't have an administrator on site who may be able to work with that teacher every day, and so they're flying administrators around. And so it takes a period of time to really make a determination regarding that person's fitness. The other thing is that you've got teachers who, based on a number of factors, primarily the language in the collective bargaining agreements, the teachers that are moved around are your least senior teachers. So I can't say that 3 years is one person in the same class in the same job with the same supervisor over that period of time. That's probably the minority are in that situation. So you've got teachers even in a school district the size of Mat-Su where they're moving around and they may be at three different places for the 3 years that they're here as a non-tenure teacher. So there is a lot of transiency even among teachers, and more so with teachers who are brand new, because seniority often is what determines that. And small school districts, rural school districts, have been very supportive of this change because of their structure and their inability to have administrators maybe spend as much time with their teachers as we may be able to do. So I do want to remind the board that this is an AASB resolution, so those factors also play into it. The other part of it is that what you're working with is very different than what teachers are working under, because there are laws that talk about dismissal and reasons for dismissal that apply to tenured teachers, and those are very defined for us and kind of the constraints that we're working under if that happens. But again, we really focused our testimony and our support for the change with the RIF. So it wasn't all about the extension of time for evaluation. I think we could take advantage of that, but our comments really focused on the RIF support.
Are there any more questions for administration? All right, seeing no questions for administration, let's move on to discussion. Member Lacey?
No, I think it made my point pretty clear.
Would anyone like to discuss this? Member Cheesham.
Yes, I think at any other time it might be worth considering, but this on top of the new evaluation system, on top of the anxiety that Member Welton talked about, it's just not a good time. Nationwide, 48% of our teachers leave within the first 5 years. And from what I've read, the majority of those teachers, when they have qualification exams, are on the higher end of those test scores. On an individual level, you can see an obvious problem where there's a need to maybe get rid of a teacher. But on the higher level, the real problem, the invisible problem, is how to keep the really strong teachers. And in this environment, and so their rationale here is exactly why I'm opposed to this at this moment in time, because there's just so much that we're throwing at the teachers, and that's going to translate to a more difficult environment for the kids in the classroom. So I think at this time we should not support this.
Member Larson.
Excuse me. I would debate that to a point that we used to retain employees and state employees quite a bit when there was a 20-year or a 30-year retirement, which we do not have anymore. So what I've seen in both state and school districts now is people are more mobile. There's no light at the end of the tunnel, per se, so they move to different opportunities and aren't as dedicated to a particular job, except I take my hat off to teachers. Most teachers are dedicated to teaching and staying there. I would like to support the rural schools if they really think they need this, because what's going on in rural schools is most of your teachers just stay 3 years, get tenure, and then they leave. They go to other school districts. Maybe that's their method of keeping them for 5 years. I don't know. But I'll support the amendment to support the small schools. I know it doesn't work well with us here because we do have a great administration and a great way to make sure that our teachers are going to be excellent and get their tenure. That's my comments. Thank you.
Any more board members? Member Williams.
Yeah, the resolution doesn't talk about whether or not teachers who are in their third year and were on track to tenure are going to be grandfathered in or not. How does the board think that would affect those teachers?
Do we know? Okay. I don't think we know. Member Rutherford.
Yeah, I think that would have to be worked out in the legislation. But I'm pretty torn on this one, and I'm not comfortable supporting it for the reasons they list there, even though I can see where it might make more sense for more rural districts, but that's not us. And I'm not comfortable with supporting it as a backdoor way to get what we want for other maybe compelling reasons. You know, the RIF is a compelling reason that I could be convinced, but that's not listed in that resolution at all, that reasoning. And so it's just, even though there may be some good reasons for it, because of the way this is worded, I'm not comfortable supporting it.
Just to answer Member Williams, the bill that not that it's part of the resolution, but the bill that was brought forward last year by the legislature did not have a grandfather status. So individuals who were in their third year on track would not become tenured that next year. They would have to proceed through the 5-year tenure point. But anyone who had previously earned tenure would keep their tenure, even if they were, say, in their fourth.
Okay. Member Welton.
I have a question about our negotiated agreements. Does this change our negotiated agreements that are already, you know, in effect, or would it be the next time that we would negotiate that it would come into effect?
Our negotiated agreements don't define tenure. They reference tenure. So as soon as this came into effect, our negotiated agreements, the application would look a little bit different, but we would not have to renegotiate anything to make this change work or be effective.
Any other comments, discussion from the board? All right. I did want to say that I would like to support the small schools. I talked with a friend who is long-term subbing out in a village, and she said that
the teacher who she's subbing for has taught at 6 different schools for maybe 3-4 months at a time and has moved around the district. So I don't believe with principals changing or principals not on site that that really those teachers are getting a fair evaluation, or more importantly, those students maybe aren't getting a teacher that has been fairly evaluated. So I'm voting to keep this teacher tenure resolution in there, but I'm also very, very concerned about a RIF. If it comes down to our school district, and we're going year by year on funding here, and we're not going to have a 3% decrease in our students, and if it comes down to it and we have to lay, get rid of some teachers, what if we're overstaffed in English teachers, but we don't have any science teachers? I'm just pulling that out of the air. I'm not saying that's what we have. What if we're overstaffed in those English teachers, and what we need is science teachers? What are we going to do with those English teachers? You know, are they going to come work at the school district and we're still going to pay them and still not have a science teacher? I mean, I'm concerned about this, and I think we need to look forward. There are no guarantees with our state legislature if they're going to give us more money. I've been going to the Senate Finance Committee's EED meetings. I've been going to those things, and it doesn't look really good. So we need to make plans for the future. So I am supporting this as written, not necessarily for the reason they give as written, besides supporting rural school districts, but I'm concerned about that RIF, and I don't want to have a whole bunch of teachers we're paying who aren't teaching in the classroom and not have the teachers we need for the classroom. So any more discussion from the board? Member Rutherford.
I would just ask that either way that the vote goes, the it sounds like it's something we should bring up at the AASB meeting to talk about that other rationale that they don't mention at all here, and get them to acknowledge and decide whether or not they support our reasoning as opposed to that reasoning, because you have some firsthand knowledge. I don't. That makes it more difficult for me to just say that I'm supporting small schools in this vote, and I would like our rationale to be acknowledged in there.
All right, Member Williams, how would you vote on this?
No.
Member Lacey.
No.
Member Rutherford.
No.
Member Cordero.
Yes.
Member Welton.
No.
Member Cheesham.
No.
Member Larson.
Yes.
And I too vote yes on this. We are not supporting this as a board, and the vote is 4-3. All right, so we'll move on to the next one in line. Can someone bring up 4.15, teacher evaluations?
I move that we look at 4.15, teacher evaluations.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak on this topic? All right. We have time for questions of administration. If any member of the board has a question that the administration can answer, not the whim of AASB. Does anybody have questions of administration? All right, Member Lacey.
The new evaluation system is based on this thing we just talked about here a couple minutes ago, the this right here. Am I not correct?
Through the chair, the new evaluation system does include student assessments, and the state assessment is one of the up to four assessments that may be used.
Through the president, but we don't honestly know exactly how this evaluation is going to unfold with this. No? Yes?
Katie?
We know that there are incremental steps where we have to consider student data, a minimum of two, a maximum of four student data pieces as part of the evaluation system, and those do not come into play until the fall of 2015, and then we escalate the how much of the evaluation is based on student data over a period of time. So we are still working internally and with the state on how our process will look and how the student data is going to be incorporated into the evaluation system.
Member Lacey.
Being a vocational teacher, how would those people be evaluated? There's no standardized test for it. How is that going to happen?
Part of the regulations that were passed by the State Board of Education required that districts work collaboratively with teachers to establish and define the assessments and the targets that are going to be used to measure teachers' performance in terms of student data. So the state's not pushing out what those are going to be if they don't exist for that teacher. We will work internally to determine what those are. And we have some broad discretion in finding assessments that are given and will work for us.
Member Welton.
I just want to clarify that the actual resolution says that AASB urges the Department of Education and Early Development to help school districts implement the new regulations. They're already there.
Correct.
We can't not do that. So we want help in how to implement the new regulations for evaluating teachers, administrators, and special providers in public schools. I would support this because it is asking for help for something that we have to do anyway.
Member Larson.
Thank you. It urges the Department of Education and Early Development to help school districts. Am I correct in saying that we are developing our own and we're helping the Department of Education figure it out in the first place? Is that kind of where we're at right now? We're kind of taking the lead on this whole thing because there is no, the law passed, but there was no substance behind it. I mean, there was no how you're going to do it.
At the time of passage, the state did not have formal guidance for school districts. Their Kenai School District has really been the leader and on the forefront of this. They have made some changes previously to their evaluation system, and so they've sort of been leading the way. We are making progress. We, as soon as the regulations were passed, we hit the ground running and started working so that we had a system that would meet be in compliance with the regulations that were passed. The state has been working very hard to put out guidance materials and documents to help us along the way. We've also been working with the state. We have individuals in the school district. Sean Arnold, who you heard from before, has worked very closely with the state of Alaska in helping to develop the guidance documents that they're going to work. So In some respects, yes, we're working right alongside the state to develop those guidance documents. But we're glad that we're part of that so we can have input on how that guidance is going to be delivered to school districts as well.
So once that's all figured out, because it's still a piece of work, still in progress, I assume then they can help other small school districts. The advantage we have is we have the staff, and Kenai has the staff to get a whole jump on this and get going on it so as not to have a lot of stuff imposed on us. We can be part of it.
Yes, you're very right. We had a conference call a week or two ago. Dr. Paramo participated as well, where a lot of the large districts in the state all came together with the state of Alaska to formalize the support and how we were going to all work together to kind of make this reality.
Thank you.
Member Cheatham.
Thank you very much. Through the chair, when we phase into that 50% that's based on student growth, The other 50%, do we have, does each district have leeway on what that 50% is and how we institute that?
To some extent, yes. Our evaluation has to be based on standards, and the standards are established in Alaska law as well. So we don't get to write our own standards. Those are established. They've been established for years, I think, since around 2000. So those standards haven't really changed, with the exception of a new one that was adopted as part of the regulation changes. So we have discretion in terms of the artifacts that will be gathered and the evidence that will be gathered, and then we'll have discretion in with principals who really are directly doing the work to make an assessment on overall performance. But the student data component as the 50%, we will have some discretion in terms of the individual learning objectives and the targets that will be set.
Member Cheesham?
I'm not sure if we're talking about the same thing. The 50% that is mandated by the state that's based on improvement. The other 50%, are there elements of teacher, of principal observing the teacher in the classroom and seeing the teacher do certain behaviors that we know that good teachers do and that kind of thing?
Yes.
That's the part that we have control over.
Yes. Observations are also part of the law and have to be a part of it. But in terms of saying whether that's good teaching or not, yes, we'll have discretion there.
Okay.
Katie, would you say that this teacher evaluation is already imposed on us? We are doing our best to do a teacher evaluation as best we can, and that this resolution is just to ask AASB asking that the state give guidance and help.
Yes, the regulation's in place, and we are obligated and required to comply with the regulation that was already passed.
All right. Member Larson.
I was going to kind of go on the same line. Where I foresee this happening is the big schools are going to assist the smaller schools through the Department of Education to share resources to show what the bigger schools or the schools that could develop it have done.
Okay, do you have a question?
No, the whole question, the whole statement here is we want the Department of Education to show, but in virtually everybody's going to share resources once this is developed. Thank you.
Okay, so I think we're finished with the question section. We will move on to comments from the board. Any more comments from the board? I know we've kind of gone back and forth. Member Cheesham.
Yes. Well, I think I'm going to support this. We are sort of powerless at the moment, I hope this goes away, to tell you the truth. In New York, what happened, and I know our freedom of information laws are different than in New York, but in New York they had a similar situation, and the New York Post got a hold of all the teacher scores, and they posted a big spread, worst teacher of the year, best teacher of the year on one side, and worst teacher of the year on the other side. The worst teacher, by all observation from the principal and so forth, was a very good teacher, but was teaching a difficult class, English language learning. I'm just really afraid that we're going to have a situation, and the assistance that I want to happen here is the assistance that helps us prevent this scenario happening, where the principal sits down with the teacher and says, you know, I know you're the best teacher in the building, you know you're the best teacher in the building, but I can't recommend tenure because the data doesn't match up, and that's the kind of thing we really have to watch out for and work hard to make sure that we don't do that.
All right. If there's no more comment from the board, Member Williams, how would you vote?
Yes.
Member Lacey.
Yes.
Member Rutherford.
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Cheesham?
Yes.
Member Larson?
Yes.
I too vote yes. This passes with 100%. We are going to take a short break, and I am dismissing Member Cordero. 5-minute break, please. I think we went over our 5 minutes. I'm calling us back to in session. So we are almost finished. The next one on our list is 5.2, Curriculum Expansion via Technology.
I move 5.2, Curriculum Expansion via Technology.
Can I have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any member of the public who would like to talk on Curriculum Expansion via Technology? Seeing no members of the public. As an explanation to the board, this is one that AASB did not have. It said it was sunsetting, but they didn't have what AASB planned to do with this. I called AASB, and they said they plan to continue to have this on the resolutions. So is there any member of the board who would like to discuss this? All right. So a yes vote would mean that we agree it should continue on AASB's resolutions. Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Cordero? I'm sorry. Member Cheesham?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
I too vote yes. This stays. We're voting to keep this on. Yes. I'm sorry. Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Okay. So this is added to what we're asking AASB to continue on their resolutions. The next one in line is 5.11, Universal Access for 3- and 4-year-olds.
I move 5.11, Supporting Universal Access to Education for Alaska's 3- and 4-year-old learners.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any member of the public who'd like to speak on this? Is there any questions of the board to administration? All right, so we are in discussion. Do we remember who pulled this one and would like to discuss it? Member Larson.
Yeah, I pulled it because I really wanted to go down to when the child is born through 1- and 2-year-olds. I guess I pulled it to just emphasize the support of reading to children, reading to the child in the womb. I mean, education all the way through doesn't start at 5. It starts with parents. It starts with that child. And I guess that's why I pulled it, just to emphasize it. Thank you.
All right. Are there any other members of the board who would like to make comment on this one? Member Cheesham.
I'm sorry. And I, you know, I would love to, I would entertain an amendment for going down to the womb, but I'm afraid somebody will come up with some sort of assessment that they'll figure out that they'll make them do. So yeah, I'm sorry.
All right. Member Williams, how would you vote on this one?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Cheesham?
Yes.
Member Larson?
Yes.
I too vote yes. This one passes with 100%. All right, so we're down to 5.14, post-secondary credits.
I move 5.14, relating to post-secondary classes for secondary students.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there anyone in the public who'd like to speak on this? Is there any questions of administration from the board? All right, Member Welton.
The actual resolution says that the college credit or vocational school credit classes are while they're in high school, they're not the state is not paying for the expenses of that, but the school district is. Is that correct?
Go ahead.
I believe that the interest is that a school district has to pay for these opportunities to be through our career and technical opportunities and our monies that we have to provide the coursework. But the actual credit, so we have a tech apps class and we have a CNA class. But if they will get the course paid for by the high school, but the credit for those types of classes are $25 each, and that's worked out with the university at a very discounted price. So districts across the state are requested to provide those higher level, and what they're saying is we need more money to do so.
Are there any other comments? Any other, questions of administration? All right, so we're moving on to comments. Member Welton? Member Rutherford? No? All right, so I guess we'll just move on and vote on this. Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Cheesham?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Oh, Carly?
Yes.
And I too vote yes, so this passes with 100% support. So we are finished with AASB resolutions.
I would like to move 14-026 resolution, 14-002 supporting the site for the Denina Elementary School.
Second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded.
Oh,
Member Cheesham.
I was too late. I was wondering if there would be a way to bank the next four items into one and vote.
No, we have to go through them this way.
Okay.
Sorry. Okay, so it's been moved and seconded. Is there any member of the public who would like to make comment on this? Do we have an administrative report?
Madam President, administration is present to answer questions as needed. Thank you. And that will be the same for C.
All right. Member Welton.
When I was on the site selection committee, I recused myself because my son owns property nearby, and it's the borough has said I did not need to, but I went ahead and recused myself there. It's up to this body as to whether you think I can vote on this or not. I'm just bringing it forward so that you recognize that there could be a conflict of interest.
Does any member of the board have an objection to Member Welton voting on this site acquisition? All right. So is there discussion on this item? Any questions for administration on this? All right. Member Cheesham, you went to this site selection committee meeting? Did they settle on this site pretty rapidly, or was there any?
Thank you. The only trouble was about the soil, and we hammered together language that the whole thing, and it's in our resolution too, that it's contingent upon the engineering reports from the looking at the soil. And this is basically joining smaller parcels to the larger campus site, and they expect, if anything, that the soil test will be better than what's already there. But it seemed like a no-brainer to put everything on the same campus. And so.
All right. Thank you. All right. Seeing no more discussion, we will go ahead and vote. Carly Williams, how would you vote?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Cheesham?
Yes.
Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
And Member Lacey?
Yes.
I too vote yes, so this passes.
I would like to move 14-027, Resolution 14004, supporting ballot proposition number B2, transportation bonds.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak on this? Does anybody have questions for administration on this? All right, we are open for discussion. Is there any comments? Okay. Member Williams.
Yes.
Member Rutherford.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Chisholm.
Yes.
Member Larson.
Yes.
And Member Lacey.
Yes.
I too vote yes. This one also passes.
I would like to move 14028, AASB Board of Directors nomination.
Can I have a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. What this is for is I have been trying for years to get a member of the Mat-Su Borough School District. We are the second largest school district in the state, and we have not had someone on the AASB Board of Directors, basically not having our voice heard in that board for 10 years, Sarah says. So I would like to have permission to submit my name for the nomination committee for the AASB Board of Directors. Member Welton, have you thought about that also?
I would do it if you do not want to do it.
Okay. So I think what I'm going to ask the board to approve is just a blanket for having two members of this body submit their name for AASB Board of Directors nominations. Does any board member have a comment on this? All right, so a yes vote would be giving board members on this board who are interested in submitting their name for AASB Board of Directors Nomination Committee approval to do so. Yes, the deadline is October 15th. All right, Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Chisholm.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Rutherford.
Yes.
Member Lacey. Member Wilson, Williams.
Yes.
I too vote yes. So we are down to the end of our action items. Moving on to, we have no non-action items. So future items, future business. We have an October 1st Borough School Board elections. We do not have a school board meeting the next day. Our next school board meeting will be October 16th after the certification of the elections, which usually happens on October 15th or the Tuesday, the second Tuesday. So is there any other future items, future business anybody would like to add to? Member Larson.
We have a AASB in November 6th through the 9th. When do you want us to submit if we're going to go to that or not?
AASB is the 7th through the 10th. The 7th through the 10th, we ask new board members to be available to go down to that. Also, returning board members, you don't necessarily have to spend the Thursday, which is the resolutions committee and a few other things, but it would be helpful if board members do go to that, and we just need to let Stacy know within, what, the next couple of weeks? Okay, just as soon as you have made yourself available to go to that, let Stacy know and she can make arrangements. I want to ask if we can also, in the past we've sent students
I want to ask if that is okay with the board to also send students to their leadership at that time. All right. Okay, so we'll be sending students also to that meeting. Member Welton.
Future item, I would like for the board to address updating the policies through AASB so that we can have the state regulations and case studies and things that reflect the policies. And there's a subscription to that, and I just would like it to brought to the board as an action item.
Okay.
To spend the funds for that.
Okay, so we can put it on next agenda for that.
Okay.
Anybody? No other future items, future business? Ms. Williams, do you have anything?
Just a reminder that our next SAB meeting is the 25th, so if you guys want to come plan to pop in, we'd be happy to see y'all.
All right. Okay, so Member Welton.
There are some policies that will be coming forward after revisions have been made on the 3000 and 4000 series.
Do you want that to be on the October meeting?
If I think it'll be in the future in November. So we'll
look for that.
Maybe even later, but I'm just letting you know that there's some coming up.
Okay. All right. Member Rutherford.
I don't remember if we usually put it on here, just a reminder that the first Monday in October, October 7th, we'll have the Joint Assembly Committee meeting, Monday the 7th.
All right. So we'll put that on. All right, are there any other committee meetings that are scheduled? All right. Okay, so persons to be heard on non-agenda items. I don't see any newcomers to the meeting who didn't hear the rules for persons to be heard. Is there any member of the public that would like to come speak before the board? I think you all are looking as tired as we feel. So seeing no members of the public who would like to speak before the board. We're moving down to correspondence and board committee reports. Member Welton, you had a committee meeting?
Yeah, the policy committee meeting did occur yesterday. I've seen Jean in a lot of meetings the last couple of days, and the same with Rob Piku. We reviewed the 3000, 4000 series and had pulled some, and we talked a little bit more about those items. We also went on to the student series, which is the 5000 series, and we discussed truancy issues and attendance stuff and policies and things that have to do with that. The 5000 series is usually fairly up to date because we go through a majority of those policies during the year and the principals stay on top of those. In June of every year, the handbook is updated, and that's a big section of the 5000 series. So not much that will be coming forward from that. We did go over the naming of the school again and looked at that, and we're not recommending any changes to how that was done. The policy's pretty clear, but it allows a lot of discretion, so we feel it's going to stay the same unless somebody else wants to bring up something on that. And that was in the 7511 or something like that was the number of that policy. That was brought up because we had the issues with the naming. I don't believe there was anything else that we went over. The next series is instruction, and that's the 6000 series, and we've scheduled a meeting for October 29th. And that's at instruction at 4:30 in the afternoon.
29th at 4:30. Okay.
Is there any correspondence to the board? Member Larson?
I just want to talk about committees if I could. I was put on the AASB Awards Committee. I was requested to go on it, and I volunteered to do that. And that'll meet on that Thursday. So let's see, that'll meet November 6th.
Okay. All right. I did receive a piece of correspondence from the students at the middle college, some of which was discussed earlier today. It was good to hear from students and their concerns, so we will be following up on that correspondence. So comments from the school board and administration. Dr. Prama.
Mr. Phelps. Mr. Stone? Thank you, Madam President. No comments.
Member Williams?
I already mentioned our SAB meeting next week. I will not be able to attend that SAB meeting since I will be traveling in Nome to represent students to the State Board of Education. But if you guys are interested in coming, I will let our president know. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Member Lacey?
Thank you. First off, since we do need things with credits, is there some way that we can get vocational class credit for the students of ours that are at the Northern Susitna Institute working on Alaska studies, whether it be aircraft or whatever else they do up there? Is there some way that we can do something with that? So that's one thing.
Okay.
Excuse me?
College credit? Or
no, a vocational
high school credit.
Through the president, I don't know if you wanted to answer. We actually currently do that through other credit options.
But we can do that for them up there?
We already do, yes.
Okay. Last week, a couple weeks ago, I was talking to somebody who worked for MEA, and the debate over the buried versus aerial power line through Wasilla. I was told that anybody who lives in the Wasilla city limits is going to pay higher electric bills. We have four schools there. I'd like to know how much that's going to cost us. The next thing is last weekend, my daughter and I walked through Wasilla High School, and we walked on the new fields and everything, and just outside the gate there are two light stanchions. When the contractor went in there and built those, he left covers off, so there's high-voltage wiring exposed to, I don't know, children. I think that needs to be fixed. Also, last week, I drove past Colony High School, and again tonight, and there was a roof that was leaning up against the side of the, a ladder leaning up against the side of the building that the contractors were using. Now, I taught there in the time when somebody got up on the roof and took the Y off the word colony. This is an attractive nuisance, and I cannot believe these contractors are not paying attention to this kind of stuff. So we need to make sure that is taken care of. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Lacey. Member Rutherford.
My only comment is that I hope that the ground freezing stays away long enough for the rest of the playgrounds to get in. I'm looking forward to seeing those this end of the valley playgrounds get in. Thanks.
Thank you. Member Welton.
I usually have a ton of comments. The Justice Coalition meeting was this morning. For those of you who have never attended, it does exist, and Mr. Stone and Mr. Piku can attest to that because they were there also. We had a really good conversation this morning about the youth. Also, I had lunch at the gathering place for the homeless youth in the valley and saw their facilities and the work that they're doing. They do make it so that some of our students in who are having difficulties can find work, can find a place to stay, those kinds of things for during the day. They're not a shelter. They don't take kids in. But they have a coffee place so that you can buy coffee. The public is welcome to come for their coffee. And they start at 7 o'clock in the morning. And they also do car detailing. So and they are hiring students, you know, young people to do this, and giving them job skills. And I think it's great. I think you would like to, you know, see what's going on in our community. A lot of volunteer hours to put this together. And I think that's it. End of my comments. Thank you.
Member Cheesham.
Yes, wanted to thank Mr. Arnold and Ms. Goyette for that great presentation on the assessments, and lots of questions bubbling up, but it was really helpful to get that foundation. And I also want to thank once again, you know, I don't know if I'll be meeting with you all again, but I wanted to thank the people of the board who selected me for this time, and I sure enjoy working with you all. Thanks so much.
Member Larson.
Yeah, I want to congratulate the IT section for getting that exemplary school district award. I think that's a wonderful contribution to our school district once again. The October 16th board meeting, doesn't look like I can attend, and I can't attend it telephonically because I'll be out of the country, but I will check to see if I can attend it. That's all. Thank you.
All right. I would just like to, again, congratulate IT for getting the award. I also want to thank the staff. We're not always the easiest people to answer questions and spend a lot of time explaining to us our own AASB resolutions. I want to thank the staff for doing such a good job in explaining information, detailed information to us, and I really appreciate the effort they put forward to answer all of our questions. With that, I think we are going to be moving into executive session. Can I have someone?
I'd like to make a motion we move to executive session.
I'll second that. And this for matters the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the government unit, subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of any person, provided the person may request a public discussion. Matters which by law, municipal charter, or ordinance are required to be confidential, matters of confidential legal counsel or pending litigation. This is for CEA negotiations, and in the executive session will be board members Dr. Paramo, Jean Stone, and Ms. Gardner, and Luke Folk.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection? We are in executive session.